Okay, I thought so.
The council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard? Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Item 1086, declare intent to provide city funding to construct the Portland Streetcar Loop Extension Project and to partner with the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon to provide for funding of operations.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council. I want to thank everybody for attending this afternoon's council's proceedings. Before us today is a historic opportunity to bring streetcar to the east side of Portland. It is also an opportunity to build a streetcar extension with more matching resources than ever before. I'm honored to follow in the footsteps of three previous transportation commissioners, Earl Blumenauer, Charlie Hales, and Jim Francisconi, who saw the wisdom of building and extending the streetcar operations throughout the central city. Or more accurately, I guess I should say, rebuilding the streetcar operations throughout the city. We, of course, are the beneficiaries of a Portland that was once a streetcar city that had 120 miles of streetcar-oriented development that helped establish us as a city in the early 20th century. Sadly, the lion's share of these streetcars have been paved over. We're probably seeing more and more of those old streetcar tracks than ever before with digging up of downtown for light rail. Almost every single excavation that we've done for light rail throughout the city recently, we've dug up old streetcar tracks. Streetcar also moves forward our efforts and our goals to take our portion of the 2040 growth targets in a relatively compact, pedestrian, and transit-friendly development pattern. It is what helps make Portland, Portland. When a previous council in 2001 made the bold decision to bring streetcar back, it made a commitment to a central city circulator, the streetcar loop. We started on the west side, and if the community embraced the effort, we intended to extend it to the east side. In doing so, we hope to knit together the city's east and west in a way we've never been able to accomplish otherwise. East and West are distinct in many ways, and while we value and embrace that diversity, we both contribute to a very rich, often admired central city core. Providing a circulator will enhance that diversity and make it more accessible to everyone. 6 years after that important and far-sighted decision, I think it's safe to say that the community has embraced streetcar. Both the ridership and the adjacent development have exceeded and continue to exceed expectations. We've extended the streetcar 5 times since that first initial effort. And this is very important for other reasons, given that the era of cheap oil is over, and we have to provide more options to more people than simply driving alone in their car. The opportunity before us today is to cross the river from the Broadway Bridge south to OMSI and bring us one significant step closer to completing that loop vision. In fact, the next and final installment in the loop effort is well underway under the leadership of our partner TriMet and Metro with its Milwaukee Light Rail project and the new Willamette River Bridge connecting OMSI to the South Waterfront. We are actually very close to completing the vision loop. In terms of the resources that will be used to, capital resources used to build this project, as you know, I'm busy trying to engage the community in a discussion about how we take care of the $422 million city backlog in transportation maintenance, doing that in partnership with the county that on its Willamette River bridges has at least a $325 million maintenance backlog. It's important to note that we have worked hard that the resources that are going in, the capital resources that are going in to build this streetcar extension are not resources that we could use for maintenance improvements on the basic transportation system. Lottery dollars, tax increment dollars, MTIP transit dollars, and FTA Small Starts resources. Those are resources that we either use for transit or they go to other transit projects. The part that does compete is the that could be used for basic maintenance is the $1.2 million that we envision coming from new parking meter revenue on the east side, and that will help underwrite the costs of streetcar operations. Those parking meter increases or new parking meters are being done with the approval of the business district in that area for these purposes. I also want to underscore that we do have challenges ahead. This is the beginning of the next phase of this process. The estimates, as I've said before, are low confidence. We have not done preliminary engineering. This moves us to preliminary engineering. The package before us, after I amend it, will also hire an outside third party to do over-the-shoulder looks at where we can and should look for and quantify risks and suggest methods to manage and control those risks. We're going to have Vicki Deedy today and Greg Jones of PDOT, if you'd come forward, along with Keith Rakowski and Ken Rust, who are going to talk about the project. We have a discussion guide that they'll be going through. Council has paper copies of it in front of them. The rest of you will see it on the TV screen above us. And also Carter McNichols from Shields Olblitz is here today. When we had the council work session, a number of great questions were raised by the mayor, and Commissioner Saltzman has also asked questions since then. We'll be seeking to answer those questions as part of this presentation. So with that, I will turn it over to Vicki Deedy.
Thank you. Okay, you're not seeing an install now box, are you?
There we go.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Can you move that box to...
I can't.
Pull it down.
Gotcha.
Grab the blue bar and pull it down.
All righty, there we go. So the PowerPoint presentation that we're going to be showing to the council this afternoon is a relatively abbreviated version of what we did for the council work session. That was about 3 weeks ago. But we thought it important to review kind of the significant issues that are in front of council regarding this project, as well as we wanted to use the presentation as a discussion tool as we go through it. So as we go along, please feel free to answer questions anywhere along the line to any of the people at the desk. I'm going to talk quickly about the context of the project. Greg Jones is going to talk about capital finance. Ken will talk about the financial analysis. Keith will talk about impact to the urban renewal districts. Paul will talk about operations finance plan and then what we do next. In the context, well, first of all, we'll look at the alignment, which we've all seen before, but what the alignment does is it achieves and supports both regional and local transit, environmental, and economic goals for our central city. It attracts 2.4 million square feet of new development into the area, additional housing units that we would not expect without the streetcar, and very importantly, it helps reduce regional vehicle miles traveled by 28 million miles per year, and that's based on the new housing units. In addition, it will transport about 3.5 million riders each year. From a regional standpoint, the central city, both the east and the west side, is our region's premier mixed-use center and deserving of investment. More intensive mixed-use development promotes greater efficiency in the use of our land, which has an impact on the urban growth boundary, and again, the major contribution to reducing VMTs. From the city's perspective, it is important for us as a part of the 2040 plan to attract and serve new jobs and housing to the central city. Metro's 2025 projections show 15,700 new jobs. And with the streetcar, the Hovey report shows that we'll have an incremental 3,432 housing units. And the streetcar will provide the circulation and access for the workers, residents, and visitors, again, reducing VMTs per capita. excuse me, and the investment in the streetcar on the east side will help to connect both sides of our central city. In the central east side, I mean, you're going to see this kind of a common theme roll through, but it's really the connectivity between the urban renewal areas and other parts of the central city. And in the central city, I think it's important to note that it concentrates the most intensive development in the EX zoned commercial corridor, and thus leaving the industrial sanctuary designation intact. It will help leverage higher density development at the Burnside Bridgehead project site, and we will show upgrades to the transportation system, help reduce congestion, and we will be improving the pedestrian environment. At the Oregon Convention Center, again, we're going to have better connections to both the central east side and to downtown with all the activities that are kind of interrelated there. A good connection to the regional light rail system, and a good option for inner city commuters to the Lloyd Business District. Right now, people coming on buses to the train to downtown tend to go all the way downtown before they come back to the central east side, and we'll give them a really good north-south route. And it will leverage opportunity for higher density development on the underutilized parcels adjacent to the land. There's a lot of big surface parking lots there. My mouse is not working. This one?
Yes.
Thank you. I'll go back. All right.
One more back.
It's not going back. Here we go. And the last of the urban renewal areas, of course, is the River District. And we will create a really good access to directly to the east side to bring people back and forth to visit all the different attractions. And it will improve the access for the residents within the River District over to the east side for the activities going on at the Rose Court Guard, the Lloyd District, OCC, and OMC.
One thing just to insert there is this would be the River District's first contribution to a streetcar project. The streetcar that is in the River District right now was paid for, I think there was a contribution of $1.3-ish million from developers, and the rest came from parking meter revenues and parking garage revenues.
Yes.
Is a rare example where the city incented and subsidized the creation of tax increment resources.
In fact, fully half of that project was funded by bonds from the parking garages. I'm having a demo. There we go. I am now going to quit doing that and turn it over to Greg, who will talk about the capital finance side.
All right, the next slide shows the sources of funds as well as the estimated expenses by category for the streetcar. The expected cost of the streetcar, as the application will be submitted to the FDA by TriMet, will actually be $146,915,474. That's slightly different than the slide by about $1,500. As a result of a change in the template that we're using with FDA to submit the application. At this point, that level of precision is not where we're at. We're still carrying a 20% contingency. I don't want to mislead you to believe that we're down to that level of accuracy.
What happened is we got a patch update. That's what happened here.
Security system is taking over, I'm afraid.
Big brother.
Meanwhile, I'll keep going. The sources of funds for the project are primarily derived from the Small Starts program with the FTA, and that's with this commitment of funding and with the LID second reading, that application will be submitted to the FTA by TriMet. And that is expected amount to be $75 million. The remainder of the funds are from local sources, 20% or $20 million of state lottery funds for the vehicle purchases, $15 million for the LID, and about $3.7 million of MTIP funds for the Bridgehead project, which will be incorporated into this effort. The remainder of the funds are tax increment funds, that will be, $6 million of SDC funds as well. The remainder of the funds are tax increment funds out of the varying districts. The expenses, the primary expense is in construction at $83.7 million with an additional $20 million for the vehicle purchase. Design, project management, and construction represents about 13.6% of that construction and acquisition cost. That's in keeping with our design and administration costs on other PDOT projects of larger sizes. When we get into smaller scale projects, that number tends to go up to the 25 to 30% range, typically those you see on the small residential LIDs and things like that. Larger projects like Marine Drive, the North Lombard Overcrossing, tended to be in the 12 to 15% range. This is right in there. The remainder of the costs are represented in testing, inspection, insurance, other agencies' expenses, and we're carrying about $17.1 million in contingency. So that's about a 20% contingency on the project expense. Finance costs, we're carrying $5 million. As Ken will talk a little bit later about how the expected finance cost is actually less than that, but we're still carrying the $5 million amount. And finally, that totals out again to the $146,915. The project will be administered through Portland Streetcar, Inc. The cities will have a contractual relationship with Portland Streetcar. Portland Streetcar will then have a contractual relationship with our design firms, with Shields and Oblets to do project management, and the construction contract will be let through PSI as well.
No, that'll be just a city contract.
City contract, I'm sorry. The streetcar has been contracted by the city. These are generally PDOT projects. We have a great record and a great history with Portland Streetcar, Inc. We have completed 5 sections of the streetcar, the recent one most recently opened on August 17th. And all of those have been coming in on contract, on budget, on time. And if you look at the history, all of these decisions on all of the streetcar projects have been made by council. And Commissioner Adams sits on the streetcar board. The board advises council. But the decisions ultimately are all made by city council.
And as transportation commissioner in charge, I'm responsible to city council for the oversight of the project.
Right. In the past, since 95 with the first streetcar line, we've been to council over 200 times. All of the resolutions and all of the ordinances that have been approved have been unanimous. And we've had just an excellent role and relationship with Portland Streetcar in completing these projects through construction. In terms of the issues related to construction, we have a number of items that will need to be explored further during the design phase between now and December, prior to the grant application, which would occur at 50% design. We will continue to look at the Broadway Bridge. It's probably the highest risk factor in terms of the crossing. The intent is to use David Evans Incorporated to work with our design firms to come up with a design that's acceptable to the county. The county is also using David Evans as the same design firm for their remodel of the bridge. So we're using the most knowledgeable firm to address that most difficult problem. The freeway overpasses and the OMSI structure are probably the two other high-risk areas with the project. They're both structural additions and changes. And so those are the issues that we will explore over the next few months as we move into the construction application.
What is the OMSI structure?
The OMSI structure is a would be a bridge that would extend from the MLK Viaduct area across the Union Pacific and Samtrak's over to grade on Water Avenue. There are a number of alternatives that are being looked at, and we're close to an alternative, but it's a free span structure across those tracks, and it also has to fit under a high tension power line. So it's a bit of a tricky design. Finally, options, what happens if the costs go up? I think the clear option is we're back to you to discuss that with you, and the commissioner will present options, either shortening the line or looking for additional revenues.
But unlike, for instance, the tram project, where you can't shorten the tram project necessarily, this one, because it's terrestrial, a good place to shorten it if we have to is to just do the loop and not go over the railroad tracks to OMSI. So it isn't just a question here of where do we come up with more money. That'll be an option, but we also have the option of shortening the alignment if we have to and still have a very functioning, working extension of the streetcar system.
And the intent would be if we have any changes in the estimate as we move forward, we will deal with those changes in the estimate before we go out to bid and construction with the project so that we're not dealing with them through change orders or through some difficult negotiations with the contractor.
Ken? Thanks, Greg. I'm going to talk a little bit about the financial analysis that we've done for the project. The table that's in front of you gives you a breakdown of the sources and uses of funds for the project over the projected construction period. Construction really extends for about four fiscal years, although the first fiscal year is primarily in the design and pre-construction activities. And the 3 years that are the major construction years shows the cash flow requirements of between $40 and about $57 million. The good thing is that we do have a number of the project sources of funds coming in over the construction period, but there's not a complete match between expenditures and sources of funds, and so we will have to do some sort of interim borrowing. I'll talk a little bit about that particular part of the city's obligation. Not unusual for this type of project that the city would be carrying project costs using a line of credit backed by the general fund. Our projections show that based on the cash flow for the project that the maximum size of the line of credit would be about $18.5 million. And that line of credit would be taken out in the final year of construction when we receive, when the project's completed and we actually receive the assessments for the LID. They come in at the end after the project is in service. And then the transportation SDCs also flow in that last year. So those would be the ways in which the line of credit would be repaid.
When you say taken out, you mean paid back?
Paid back, that's correct. So the maximum borrowing size is about $18.5 million. Our projection is that the carry costs or the interest paid on that line of credit until we take it out or repay it in 2011 would be about $2.8 million. And as Greg mentioned, in the cash flow projections, we have an assumption of financing costs of around $5 million. So we do have a little bit additional resource in that particular line item. I have some recommendations for that I'll talk about a little bit later in the discussion. In addition to the interim financing costs for the project, we will also be financing a significant amount of the project contribution from tax increment. In each of the tax increment districts, typically what we do is have line of credit borrowings for those particular districts and then take out those lines of credits with long-term borrowings. So there may be some additional borrowing costs incurred by the tax increment districts. They are not included as part of the direct project costs. In terms of tax increment financing, since about $27 million is the funding source from that that piece of finance distributed over three urban renewal districts, it's important to know that the way we constructed the financing is that there are certain limitations and restrictions that are imposed on us when we use the tax increment financing tool. We cannot finance more costs in an urban renewal district than we actually have project costs for. So when we did the allocation of costs, the $17 million of urban renewal financing for the River District is equivalent to the amount of project cost in that urban renewal district. We couldn't have $20 million in that particular urban renewal district, for example. It's also important to note that when we add streetcar loop costs to the existing financial obligations and plans associated with the urban renewal districts, that does have the potential of affecting other projects. Worst case, it may require us to defer some of those projects. It also may require that the general fund take on some financing risk if we're not able to have enough tax increment revenue growth over the forecast period to take out interim borrowings under the normal terms of financing we use for tax increment, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. And in some cases, I think we'll need to amend maximum indebtedness in at least the River District, although it's not directly and only related to this particular project. It's possible that might be a consideration in Central East Side as well, and there are some logistical issues and timing issues associated with that.
So, adding, well, I guess what I'm wondering is we've capped the LID contribution at $15 million.
Correct.
Have we not capped with this resolution, or I guess I'll raise the question, should we not cap the URA contributions in the same manner to protect other projects being deferred, to protect general fund risk beyond existing financial projections to repay? And I guess I raise that as a question. I mean, it's a policy issue. We can decide in a minute here, but
well, right now,
are we capable of capping the URA contribution in the same way we're capping the LID contribution at $27 million for the URA?
I mean, I think the quick answer is that you certainly could do that, and if there is a cost issue, and then you'd be looking at other revenue sources or, as Greg mentioned, actually changing the scope of the project to reduce construction costs so that it would come in within the mix of funding resources that are available. So, certainly you could
do
that.
But if we're interested in the utmost discipline of how we approach this project, is it not better to forecast now that we intend to cap the URA contributions in the same manner we're trying to be fiscally responsible to the affected property owners by the LID by saying you're only on the hook for $15 million?
One of the amendments that's before you, Commissioner, is to indicate that the resolved, the $27,183,474 will be provided from the city tax increment funds and the operations. Because we're at low confidence, we absolutely could put language in there that they're capped at that. That forestalls, and then we can undo that cap, you know, if...
I'd rather forecast and cap it now and undo it later than to sort of leave it open-ended like that.
Well, it's not open-ended the way it is written now. I want to be clear.
No, I know, but I'm just saying in the dynamic of things.
This is open-ended.
You have a hard constraint on an LID contribution, but...
We don't.
You don't have a hard constraint on a URA contribution.
No, we have a hard constraint on what we went out to under state law on the LID. If one of the options, if we are over budget, is to come back with a new LID,
right,
new notice and everything else. So there's a hard cap for what's on the table now, but we can revisit that.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just interested in URA contributions being considered in the same dialect, that it's a hard cap unless we change our minds.
I'm open to, why don't you look at the...
Okay, yeah, I just saw, thanks for pointing that out. I didn't see this memo.
Why don't you look at that, and I'm open to further wordsmithing on
it. Okay, go ahead.
Right. At this point, I'm going to have turn the discussion over to Keith and let him talk a little bit about impacts on the various urban renewal districts.
Let me get closer to you.
And I would say, Commissioner, I believe if our board was here, they would probably be supportive of that idea of capping the investment, not to throw myself into the debate. So what I'm going to do really quickly is just walk through the urban renewal areas.
Your name?
Keith, for the record. Keith Witkowski.
Thank you.
Portland Development Commission. So beginning with the River District, and Ken touched on some of this, but that's a district that receives around $18 million a year in tax increment. The original request was 2.5. It's been increased to 17. The district has the capacity to be able to absorb these costs, but it does in a way potentially defer other projects or decisions if you're going to be asking for more money for certain projects, and that's why Ken talked about the possible need to amend the district in the future and to possibly increase indebtedness. And specifically, you know, right now we're looking at Centennial Mills. There's a budget for that. It could require more resources. There's the potential of the Burnside Cooch Couplet on the west side. That's a discussion for another day, but it would need resources as well. I'm sure it would need tax increment resources. There's the discussions that are going on with the post office, and then just all the conversations around, do you expand the River District by 61, 62 acres, and what are the projects associated with that expansion? But of all the districts, the River District can best absorb the request in order to fulfill its part.
You or Ken, what's the maximum? Do you have a guesstimate or an estimate of the maximum indebtedness? What's the upper end if we wanted to increase it?
If you wanted to increase it?
And collect all of it. I'm not suggesting we do, but just to get a sense.
Well, if you're asking, like if you were to look at the River District and say, you know, I think the current indebtedness is like 220 or 225 million. And if you said, what if we extended the district for another 7 years? You know, how much could we increase that 225 by? You know, you could increase it by $300 to $400 million because of the growth that's going on there. I'm not implying you should. I'm just telling you, you know, the objective facts.
And Commissioner, you probably recall, but just for people in the room, that the mayor assigned a committee that Commissioner Saltzman and I are sitting on that's due a report back to the council and the PDC commission. We have several PDC commissioners, a county commissioner, and a planning commissioner looking at the question of how to expand both the River District boundaries and potentially the maximum deadness, and should have a recommendation back for a discussion in January with an idea that would be adopted or not adopted probably next spring.
So then I'll move to the Oregon Convention Center Urban Renewal Area. This is a district that receives about $5.5 to $6 million per year between tax increment collections and the special levy. In the budget last year, it had $2.5 million. The request now is for $4 million. It can absorb the request as well. You know, like the other districts, there's other projects that are being contemplated right now related to trying to implement some of the actions or some of the projects in the MLK Action Plan. And there's a series of known housing projects and other just contemplative projects right now to kind of continue to make Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard a great boulevard. There's the Miracle Club, which you'll be seeing an amendment on that in October, maybe, November at the very latest, that will bring in that property and along with it probably some interest to invest $3 to $3.5 million to make sure that that project, which provides a safe place for individuals that have had a history of drug and alcohol problems, a good gathering place, and then building 30 to 35 units of housing above it and really improving the continuum of the services and the care that goes on there. There's discussions right now that are also going on some blocks that are just north of the convention center with the Schlesinger Development Company, and that would be a large-scale mixed-use project. Again, all of these kinds of things are going to need resources, and there's going to need to be a discussion in the future about whether or not you need to extend the, and I don't want to get too technical here, but basically extend the date of the urban renewal plan so you can access the existing debt limits. We talked a second ago about River District and how you could increase those debt limits, the maximum indebtedness. You can't do that with Oregon Convention Center just because of the nature and the rules associated with it.
Are you saying that some of these other projects along MLK may be in jeopardy?
I don't think that they're in jeopardy. I just think that right now, when you look at the budget, that district does not have a lot of resources when you go 2-3 years out. Adding a million and a half to the streetcar isn't going to further jeopardize them, but there's going to need to be some discussion because as growth begins to happen, as development activity begins to increase in the district, we're going to need to think through how do you unlock some of the resources that could go into the area. So it's not directly tied to the streetcar, but it's a conversation between, you know, the PDC board and city council probably next spring at the latest.
Would this conversation occur anyway or as a result of the streetcar?
It would occur anyway.
Okay.
The last district I'm going to focus on is the Central East Side. And when we briefed our board on all these estimates when we got them in late July, early August, you know, it was clear the Central East Side is the district that's most at risk. I know that their preference would probably be to see the $4 million that was in the budget last year remain at $4 million and find the $2.2 elsewhere, just because the financial uncertainty and the difficulties associated with a district that hasn't seen a lot of growth in property values and associated development. And Ken's going to talk more about that, so I won't get into it at great length. But, this district gets around $4 to $4.5 million per year in terms of what it collects in tax increment. As I mentioned, their quest now is about 6.2, and it was 4. And the dynamic in this district is there's a lot of demands for the resources. There's the Washington Monroe High School. There's the Burnside Bridgehead Project. There's a lot of business assistance and economic development programs that are really important to the community down there, both the commercial property owners, the industrial property owners, and the neighborhoods. And all of that needs to happen and wants to happen in the first 5 years. And a lot of those projects are pretty young. If you look at Washington Row, for example, there's still a lot of things that need to be worked out, and it could be a project that needs more than what's in the budget right now. So this district, not completely unlike the convention center, is one that the increased ask kind of exacerbates it, but it doesn't create the problem. The streetcar, in some ways, what the streetcar does is provide an opportunity in year 6 through 10 to access more resources if the PDC board and the council and others believe that some plan amendments need to occur, basically increasing the indebtedness in the district and extending the time. Because on the forecast, conservative forecasts show that the streetcar could add another, you could add another 50 to 55 million in maximum indebtedness to that district if you had the project happen. You can't get at that money in years 1 through 5, but it would help down the road. So that's kind of a significant issue, that with the streetcar, you're able to harvest a lot more money in the long term to try and deal with some of these things. But in the short term, it still has financial constraints.
And Ken goes into a little more detail on this.
I'll talk a little about the tax increment financing policies, and Keith's kind of laid out the key issue. Generally speaking, for the urban renewal districts, and the next couple slides talk about this, is what we OMF have been doing working with PDC is to try to give some guidance and policies about how we will approach financing. And generally what we do is we look at a 20-year long-term borrowing for urban renewal with an assumed interest rate and with borrowing terms that we expect would be required for us when we go out and borrow funds in the credit markets. What we do in the interim period is we then will use a line of credit backed by the general fund to bring resources forward with the expectation that we will take those funds out, repay that with this long-term borrowing. And what we've been doing is looking out over a 5-year horizon and saying, well, how much increment is going to be expected to be realized in that 5-year time period? How do we look at converting that to long-term debt, and how much short-term borrowing can we therefore afford? And that's a model that we've used pretty successfully in Interstate when we did the Interstate Light Rail $30 million borrowing for the match on that project. And it's also something we've done with North McAdam being a little bit different in that we actually had a signed development agreement that specified certain development, and we could put a value on that and the timing of that and with consequences if they didn't develop. So those are generally the kinds of tools and the methodology that we've been using and using pretty successfully. And as Keith has mentioned, you know, we don't really see that the urban renewal requirements for this project with respect to River District are really an issue. We don't see that will be a difficult thing to be able to finance that. Convention Center is different in that the revenues are very certain. It's an Option 3 district, and those revenues that we receive now are already being received. The issue we have there is how we structure the long-term debt obligation so that we can bring other resources forward, and we're working with PDC on some tools that I think would help that. So the issue in Convention Center is very different than River District and in Central East Side. Central East Side is the district that has the most challenges because so much of the project costs are front-loaded. What we've been doing in looking at Central East Side is we actually worked with Eric Hovey and another consultant to look at different development scenarios and what might happen over a time period with or without the streetcar. And one of the slides here talks about the different scenarios that we've been doing. One, we tried to bookend what the high and low likely assessed value projections might be, one being just what has the trend been. That's been in the 3-4% annual growth rate. And then one that incorporated known projects, Burnside Bridgehead, and development associated with streetcar that Eric Hovey has identified for us. And so we thought those are probably a pretty good way to bookend what the range of values might be. And when we did that analysis, what we found is that under the two scenarios we call Scenario A and Scenario D, is we have 5-year project costs that don't change under either one of those scenarios. We have about almost $58 million of project cost in the next 5 years in Central East Side. In terms of the funding capacity, and that's how much money could we take out successfully using our conventional financing terms that I talked about, at the end of that 5-year time period, under the trend growth rates, we'd have about $26.4 million of capacity, leaving $31 million or so unfunded. If we have the enhanced growth, we actually pick up a little bit more resource, but we still have about 28.8 unfunded. And the difference between these two is that what happens beyond that first 5 years. In the next 5 years, with the streetcar and other known projects happening, you actually have a lot of increment that starts to come on. And so by the time that the district is currently set to expire in 2018, you'd be able to take out all of the borrowed funds under conventional borrowing terms and wouldn't have a problem at that point in time. In the scenario where we only grow a trend, you actually would not be able to take out all of the interim borrowing without some additional credit support for that borrowing. And what that means is that in order to do a successful financing, you'd probably have to put the general fund behind a borrowing in order to make the bond market happy about the terms and conditions and the resources that are being flowing that are flowing into the urban renewal district at that time, or try to string that out for a period of time. So there's some additional general fund risk depending on how much increment assessed value growth occurs over this forecast period. So that's really what our analysis showed, is that because of the timing of project costs and the timing of project revenues, there's going to be a mismatch. The only question is, how bad that will be, and will we be able to unwind it without additional credit support from the general fund? You know, what we've
this all on top of the 18.5 million line of credit that the general fund.
The 18.5 is for the project, and then we have the tax increment urban renewal districts that operate separately. So, for example, in Central East Side, the line of credit borrowing could be, it's probably max is at around $30 million or so. Mm-hmm. So we will, if we do all the projects as they're currently scheduled to be done, and in Central East Side, the real challenge is that 98% of the entire urban renewal project costs occur in the next 5 years. In terms of resources, depending on whether revenues grow at trend or at a higher rate, 60 to 80% of all the revenues occur after 5 years. So we have a tremendous mismatch. And the way we've typically done that is to do a line of credit borrowing, take it out, in size to how much we can take out in 5 years. In this case, we would have to suspend that policy and be willing to extend that line of credit borrowing for a longer time period to be taken out from the growth in future increment assessed value. And in order to accommodate all of the project costs under the current schedule that has been established for those projects. And the bottom line for the streetcar loop project is that the streetcar loop project, as Keith mentioned, it exacerbates that problem in Central East Side. But if you didn't have the streetcar loop project, you'd still have a very significant mismatch. It's simply a function of the way the project costs are aligned and the relative slow ramp up in growth in resources, which come on more strongly beyond that five-year time period. And so that's a risk issue for the city. It's a risk management issue for us to be concerned about how we will make sure that that doesn't interrupt or impose other financial problems on the city and the general fund going forward. But I think it's real important for the council to understand that we have that dilemma really under any circumstance, and it's going to be something you have to be mindful of and manage. A couple other considerations in addition to that is this is a very complicated financing plan. It has lots of different funding sources. It involves three different urban renewal districts. Urban renewal district funding is tricky. And I would highly recommend that as part of the project management effort that a project accountant be retained to make sure that we can track expenditures by district, by geography, to make sure that we have qualifying costs and we're very clean on that from the start, because it's very complicated for us to do that after the fact. It's something we did very successfully with the Rose Quarter project when we developed that 10 or 12 years ago, and I would highly recommend it in this instance as well. And finally, there is, according to our projections, maybe a couple million dollars of financing cost savings in the cash flow based on the budget. And if the project costs come in at budget and we have those extra resources available, I would recommend that we use it to offset some of the tax increment requests that are being made for the project. That's really a summary of the key financing issues associated with the project.
Yeah, that'd be too simple. Just to walk you briefly through the operations plan, we have a few graphics. First, let me say that we have been working very closely with TriMet staff to analyze finance and service options related to the operation of the streetcar. We've also we've been working with a funding advisory task force that Commissioner Adams and Fred Hansen of TriMet co-chaired over the last 5 months. The original proposal for the Portland Streetcar Loop at this stage is shown on this diagram. The on the bottom right is OMSI. Notice the red line. That's where the new track would be laid, starting from OMSI, heading north up the Central East Side, crossing the Broadway Bridge into the Pearl District. And then the red line overlaps the blue line heading south to River Place. So what the original proposal did was to run streetcars every 12 minutes on the new streetcar tracks from OMSI to the Pearl, but also to double the frequency of service on the existing line from the Pearl to River Place. That proposal would have cost $6.3 million per year to operate in $2011. The figures for operations that we're sharing with you today are in $2011. The ones that we shared with you earlier were in $07. The Federal Transit Administration has asked us to make that change. The next slide shows what the actual proposal is today. For 2011, which is the opening of service on the extension of streetcar to the east side, which is to run the streetcar every 12 minutes from OMSI to the Pearl, and you'll see there that the red line makes a circle and then heads back. And everything that you see on the screen, the blue line, the existing service, the red line, the new service, would all run on the same frequency, a streetcar every 12 minutes in both directions. This cost $4.2 million per year, and we'll go over how that would be financed in just a minute. The next slide shows 4 years after opening of the service on the east side, in 2015, we would complete the loop, which you now see in the bottom right corner going from OMSI southwest across the river through South Waterfront, coming up to River Place, and that would complete the loop. At that point, the proposal in 2015 would provide streetcars every 6 minutes from the North District of South Waterfront to the Pearl District. Okay, the next slide. So for now, the proposal for 2011 is calls for an annual operating cost of $4.2 million, which are in what we call the year of expenditure, 2011. We propose to finance this cost in the following manner. First, there would be a reallocation of bus service. This is pretty common when rail service is initiated. Sometimes there's a duplication of service. In this particular case, we're talking about truncating bus Route 6, which is coming down from North Portland, and what we call interlining it with bus route 70 so that there's continuous north-south service from North Portland all the way to Milwaukee. What happens at Multnomah as you come down MLK is then the streetcar service will be there, and it will run on MLK and Grand as Route 6 does today. So bus route 6 would be changed in the manner that I described, and that would provide approximately $500,000, which would go toward the cost of operating the streetcar, which replaces it in that particular segment.
So if you're riding bus 6 south on MLK and you want to go to downtown, do you have to?
You would have to transfer.
You'd have to transfer?
Right.
Isn't that, I guess, that seems like it's a fairly well-traveled line, isn't it?
Yes.
That seems like a awkward impediment to people who work downtown and live in North Northeast Portland.
Right. The way that TriMet works it is that there this issue has been discussed at length at the various committees that I described, and according to the normal process that TriMet follows, there will be a study. There will be what we call origin destination surveys to determine how many passengers would be affected by a transfer. And there will be discussions with the community prior to 2011 to address whatever impacts there are.
I mean, there'll be discussions, you're telling me, but you're already banking on the $500,000 as part of the budget. That doesn't sound like an open-ended discussion. That sounds like
right. Well, there's
that sounds like the process we're all too often accused of being guilty of. Of we've made up our mind, but we're going to discuss it with you anyway.
Well, let's just say that the as I get down to the subsidy required, that if the 500, if some of that money is reallocated back into the affected area, which sometimes occurs, then the amount of subsidy would increase. And we can, you know, once I show you that amount, we can tell you that. You know, 10 or 20% change would be $100,000 or so a year or something. So it's, but that process, you know, remains ahead of us and can be dealt with at that time. Let me get into the next item is passenger revenue. When the streetcar begins operation on the east side, most of the passengers will be drawn from existing TriNet ridership. Therefore, there is no net, there's very little new passenger revenue in the early years, in the first couple of years. For that, to address that, and also to relooking at the streetcar fares, when you look at a loop on both sides of the river, we are recommending that streetcar fares be increased to $1 per single ride ticket and $40 per month for a monthly pass. The rates are significantly lower now. For example, an annual pass on streetcar is $100, which is about $8 a month. So this is a significant change. So the $1 million projected in the first year of operation of the East Side streetcar as part of the loop is primarily coming from raising streetcar fares. As the streetcar benefit area develops, according to the projections already given you for additional housing, additional employment, then all of those new passengers will provide new passenger revenue. So the passenger revenue will grow significantly, you know, as the system matures. But in its first year, it's very tough, and we have to demonstrate pretty much through this table how we pay for passenger revenue in year one. So with those items, the subsidy required is approximately $2.4 million. And the resolution before you basically shows that the subsidy would be split equally between TriMet and Portland, and that the city's share of $1.228 million, which is, I think, the last item in your resolution, would be drawn from new parking revenue. And Commissioner Adams mentioned that this would be increasing the parking rates as well as adding additional paid parking on street in the streetcar benefit area on the east side.
Before you leave that, I think Commissioner Saltzman puts his finger on the pulse of something that is very true. And I think everyone around the table, TriMet and ourselves, in the next 3 years is to our goal is to work out a better realignment of the potential six. To meet today's deadline, that's the best we've come up with. But I don't think TriMet, if they were here, or nor would we say that is ideal or something that in the end we would like to see happen on the ground. But in terms of where we're at today, so on this timeline, this is the best we could come up with.
The entire $500,000 in savings relies on the number six rerouting, did I?
Right.
Yeah. What if we just split the difference with TriMet and kept number six serving downtown?
And that's what we'd, we're not locking ourselves into this. This is low confidence, and with that kind of direction to staff, which I think is reasonable, we can pursue that with TriMet. In terms of our negotiations with TriMet to date, this is the best we could come up with. But we've got 3 more years to finalize it, basically.
Commissioner, did TriMet agree to the additional increase? Because last time when Fred Hansen testified, he said that TriMet had only agreed to $1 million.
He was surprised by a $150,000 increase.
We added a contingency of 200. $200,000, which we split equally, which is why it changed from $1 million to $1.1. And he just hadn't seen that.
This is 1.228. I'm just asking, did he agree to this, or did TriMet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He agreed to the additional amount for contingency. Didn't like being surprised at our meeting. And if you want to send the direction, which I think is reasonable, that we want the number 6 to continue to run downtown, I think that's a reasonable direction.
Yeah. I do.
I think it would be. I'd like to hear. Fred talked about it last time. I'd like to hear again what his explanation was for that.
Yeah, I would share the concern about the 6. I actually use that bus all the time, and that's a major inconvenience to the people who use it.
The background, we talked a little bit about it. The background of this issue that we talked a little about last time at the work session was as light rail comes online downtown, running from Union Station to PSU. Over the next 3 years, we need to have a discussion about the future of Fairless Square and the future of equity on the east and west side. Some of the discussion has been informally up to this point. Is light rail the Fairless component and the buses are not Fairless? Is streetcar downtown part of the Fairless component? Do we maintain the existing Fairless Square on just the west side, but what about the east side? So part of the reasons why I think you're getting some of the puzzled looks out here among staff is we have to have a bigger discussion about fare zones from the central city, including both sides of the river, equity around that, and we have 3 years to figure that out. We're not going to be able to necessarily figure it out as part of operational funding 3 years ahead of time forecasted for the streetcar, but we would absolutely welcome the kind of direction that, bottom line, you don't want the 6 truncated.
Well, I think that's the direction at least two of us, I think, are sending. I think it's a really, as I said, it's a real inconvenience for people that will not really benefit, who travel north and south on MLK Grand, north and Burnside. I mean, they will not get any benefit from the east side loop, yet they're going to be inconvenienced by the need to transfer to go downtown.
Could I make one point on that? In interlining, the number 6 with the number 70, that interlining would probably take place at the Rose Quarter. Right now, people on the number 6 bus to get downtown, they run all through the central east side and cross over in the Hawthorne Bridge and end up at that end of town. If you do an interline at the Rose Quarter, people have different options that they can choose depending on where they are going downtown. So I think that was some of the conversation that has occurred about it. But again, without any firm decisions as to how it would actually work. So that's an ongoing deal.
Does interline mean transfer?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's still the same issue. It's where you transfer at.
Yeah.
It's still an inconvenience to transfer. I think we all accept that.
It is. Yeah, I agree. It's not the best way to get downtown, but it may help for some people as to how they do get downtown.
Well, and I have an open mind. I just don't think we have got there yet. And, I think Fred is the best transit director in the country. I'm a big fan. I do think that, and I've said this before on the light rail downtown, I do think that the new system planning is almost by definition dominated by rails needs. And it's good because rail is the new stuff we're building. But at all these hearings, including light rail, I continue to feel that at times the bus ridership is taken for granted. And I think that's going to be the heart. And, so my example on the light rails was concerned and still am concerned about the decision to put stops 4 blocks apart, not because people can't walk 4 blocks, but because you can't catch a bus if you're 30 seconds behind and you have to run another 4 blocks. And my sense is that the planners tend to be rail thinkers, and there's not always in the planning bus riders. And sort of the pragmatic needs of bus riders, I think, sometimes get not as much discussion. I don't think anybody tries to short shrift them. But so this is just another example where I think it's a great plan, and we just need to make sure the bus riders, because you lose the bus riders, you got nobody to support the rail.
So the direction of council is noted on the number 6, and we have 3 years to figure out some of the bigger issues that will shape the decisions that come back here.
And I'm not 100%. I'm with 100% with Commissioner Saltzman in spirit. If we actually say talk to the people who ride the 6 and the interlining actually makes sense to them as opposed to planners, I might be able to support something like that. It just sounds like, it's not there yet, which you agree with. So
I agree with it. So you're getting no argument here.
Okay. The last is kind of a recap of the next steps. September, I think tomorrow, there will be a small starts report submitted to the Federal Transit Administration. December of this year, PDOT will come back to council with a report on the results of the 50% preliminary engineering drawings.